mustard.
Hello. Hi. This is me, Elise Osborne, and Jesse Elias.
Yeah. I'm Elise's friend, and I'm like the guest on the show today. Isn't that cool? We're in my car in the parking structure at the mall because when me and Elise hang out, we like to go to the mall, and she was like, "Do you want to be on my podcast?" And I was like, "Yeah."
Because Jesse Elias is also a comedian and he is straight up fucking hilarious and a genius.
Thank you.
So, we want to talk about Witches and Warlocks of Tinseltown. That means movies, TV shows, the theatrical presentation
Board
of.
games. There's a lot of witches in board games, right? I mean, I've never played any of them, but you know, those like Dungeons and Dragons and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't really play a lot of board. I actually hate board games. I call them boring games.
Right.
But I do like Dungeons and Dragons, and you're right. There is a witches and warlocks thing going on.
Yeah, and I think there's a witch. There's witches in video games. There's witches in, I don't know, what other types of media do we have? Books. Did you mention books? That's books are like the original movies, video games slash board games. Books are the original board games. Choose Your Own Adventure. That's like a board game
I
with
disagree. I feel
reading.
like books are not the OG board games because I think that you don't have to be literate to play a board game.
Isn't tarot like tarot is like basically a card game.
Yeah, it is a card game.
So, a lot of board games have cards in them. So could they make, if you just got like a board, could you make like a tarot into a board game, you know? Maybe get some tarot dice, some tarot cards, some tarot pieces.
I actually love the idea of this, like the fool's journey on sort of Candyland structure. That would be so fun.
Yeah.
And then there's like little rules on cards, and that's hilarious. One of the most popular tarot decks is the Rider-Waite deck, and it's made by a company called US Games. So, I mean, this company that's literally called United States of America Games is making most of the decks that people are using.
Yeah, a game company is making tarot cards. Does that mean that tarot is a game?
Isn't life a game?
Well, actually, I don't know much about the history of tarot, but it started out as a game, right? It wasn't actually meant to. They started out as like playing cards, and then someone took those cards and used them for this other purpose. Am I right? Or am I ignorant?
No, I think the tarot, I mean, tarot, Torah, it's like it's old Jewish mysticism, and it comes, you know, connected to Kabbalistic
Really?
philosophy. You know, so in Kabbalah, one of the concepts is the basically the tree of life, which is these different spheres of consciousness,
Yeah.
and then there's pathways connecting all of them. So the different spheres have different properties and beliefs, and you can assign them to sort of like planetary forces, which in Roman theology would be like planets are gods, and these have different sort of ruling, which goes into astrology. But then the pathways between all of them are different tarot cards or tarot principles.
Can I jump in?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I'm here, right? Like, this guy is trying to get out of the car, and he can't because the parking spaces are too
Dude, that's on
small.
him. Like, we're fine.
All right. So you mentioned the.
He's just gonna have to wiggle out, 'cause I had to wiggle out.
Yeah. You mentioned the. I don't.
You're all stressed out. It's okay. Look, he's fine.
He's fine.
He got out.
Is
That
this
was
your
a.
first? Is this your first time recording in a parking lot?
Yeah, I think so. But I
He
did
was
rec.
such a good-natured little boy too. Like he didn't. He wasn't like mad dogging us for. Look, it's equally squeezed on the other side, so it's not like I'm parked lopsided. That's just how narrow the spaces are.
Jesse, I think you're not doing anything wrong. I
I'm
think we're
also
just.
not doing anything that the listener can appreciate that's related to tarot.
I believe that everyone's appreciating you right now.
Okay, so I want to backtrack. I really wanted to jump in there when you're talking about the Kabbalistic spheres, right?
Yeah, okay.
So the spheres of the Kabbalah or whatever. First of all, I didn't know that Tara and Torah are those words are related.
Yeah, I mean, all words are. I mean, okay, so this is how words are also going back into the concept of a tree. Language is like a tree, you know, we all know this, or like water, bodies of water, like everything.
Is time like a tree? I think
Time is
so.
kind of like a tree, I guess. Yeah, I
Okay.
mean,
Because like it's language develops language is something that grows and has offshoots, but time is also something that grows and offshoots. Like, it starts in one place and then it branches out in different directions.
Yeah,
time kind of does that.
I think about that for people too. Like, you know, we all can say we have shared ancestry, but when you think about an individual, I think of them as like, let's imagine a breeder. Let's just for the sake of this vision, right?
Yeah.
A breeder is someone who will have potentially 1 to 2 to 8 children. Okay, they haven't given birth yet. They're just a person awaiting pregnancy or whatever. So before them came all of these people, and you would think about that as sort of a tree, right? A family tree. So when you're walking around, you're basically in this time zone where all of these like thousands and thousands and thousands of people who are strangers to you, you'll never meet, have like come together and made you. And then if you're a breeder, like, you could be walking around and essentially the, you know, ancestors of your predecessor, like great, 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 great grandchild's ancestors are all in this fucking mall, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, who knows? Like, do you follow me? Like our ancestors, whoever they may have been, they were thousands of people that like slowly created one person. And then that one person slowly contributes to, like...
I thought the ancestors are, like, one person that slowly creates 1,000 people.
But then it goes the other way, because, like, there has to be, you know, it takes a village to make a child, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Hey, I want to get back... So, the Kabbalah thing, right? So, you've studied a lot of this stuff. How familiar are you with... I don't know much about the Kabbalah.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff. Are you familiar with, you said there's spheres of the Kabbalah, right?
Yeah, they're called Sephiroth.
Sephiroth, right.
Yeah.
So that's the question I wanted to ask you, because Sephiroth is the name of the main villain from Final Fantasy VII.
Okay.
And me and Elise had a long conversation about Final Fantasy VII before recording this, but she didn't know that.
Yeah, because I've never played it.
She never played it, and I didn't talk to her about it too much, because that would be weird. But Sephiroth is the name of the villain from Final Fantasy VII. By the way, my Twitter username is at FinalFanJesse7. That's how much I like Final Fantasy VII.
You're the final fan.
Final Fan Jesse.
Like, that's a great name.
Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy. that's how it's supposed to be pronounced. Final Fantasy VII.
Oh my God.
And so Jesse loves Final Fantasy VII. I can't talk about it too much, but I have some Final Fantasy VII. Big plans in my future. Anyway, Sephiroth is the main villain of that game, and I think they just picked that word because it sounded cool. I don't know if he's not a witch, he's not a warlock. Well, he's magical. He has magical powers.
Yeah.
And I'm going to describe his character to you, and you tell me if there's anything in this that speaks to you, that seems relevant.
Okay.
Okay, so Sephiroth is, he starts out as a soldier who's basically owned by a corporation that created him genetically. He's like a, and then he finds out that his mother is this ancient alien being who lives in a glass tank with this giant giant ass like rubber hose like feeding directly into her womb from the planet, basically.
What?
Inside of a.
Yes, I love this. I never heard this before.
This isn't talked about much in the game. It's a lot just visually. They don't ever mention it. But you just see, he finds out that his mother is an ancient being that's been alive for 2,000 years and is kept by this corporation inside a glass tank, like with her brain is like all peeled back, like some like crazy animal testing lab. They got this like giant hose thing. Like pumping into her stomach or whatever that's going all the way out, and it's actually feeding through the pelvis of this like robot, like mechanical woman torso prosthetic.
Oh my
body.
God! Yikes!
And the tube is going straight into the ground, and the tube is that goes from her womb is going into the floor of this like nuclear power plant that's sucking the life force out of the planet. It's taking the energy from the planet, which is known as the life stream, which is the stream of consciousness and souls and shared consciousness and life force that
the Empress, yeah,
gives life to all things in the earth, and this corporation is sucking that out of the earth and converting it into basically just energy to power the electrical grid and to make a profit off of it. They're killing the planet. So Sephiroth finds out that his mother is this like, this woman who's like this mutilated female body, which is ancient and thousands of years old, that's being kept like in this like prison and to that he's been biologically tested on. And he's been, anyways.
Okay. So what is the thing that we want to know about him?
I think that was the main thing, is that he has this, like, he has this weird, and by the way, he has this weird Oedipal, like, uncanny Freudian relationship with his mother, who's this, like, who's this otherworldly thing. She's not natural. She's unnatural. She represents evil, destruction, chaos, and darkness.
Does she? Or it sounds like, to me, it seems like she's probably a more natural super entity, and then she's being exploited by this other entity.
She is being exploited, but here's the thing. She came from outer space. She's an alien. And when she came down from outer space thousands of years ago and started like killing everybody, because like the aliens in Independence Day or whatever. And then the ancient beings of the planet, known as the Ancients, they were able to seal her away inside, they never say what, I think inside rock. They seal her inside the mountains, and then they excavate her body thousands of years later, and they unleash this ancient evil, and then they start like dissecting her and using her DNA to create like these weird monsters, and that's how they create
Sephiroth. This is like starting to stress me out like a lot, but
yeah, is there anything tarot related in that?
Fuck yeah, there is. Well, there's so many things, that it's reminding me of that I feel like my brain is kind of exploding. But, first of all, these old stories about, like, you know, this whole ancient aliens thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of mythology comes from this concept of, like, the star gods, right? The gods, the extraworldly creatures, or they're in a different realm, you know, and then they come to Earth to fuck with us or help us. Mm-hmm. So, and basically, like, if you think of the Sephiroth as like as deities, it's sort of impossible to really wrap your mind around them, because a lot of them have almost these elemental properties, which elemental stuff can be so elusive because it's like these little ingredients that exist in so many things, and it has its own nature. So, thinking about that having sentience becomes perplexing, because as an individual, I think that we're sort of this hodgepodge of different archetypal forces, and then the wellness of our being has to do with like being a natural person, and the less resistance we have, the less neuroses we have or whatever. But something like this figure you're talking about, thinking about her being good or bad, is really only relative to the storyline of the individual that's affected benevolently, mm-hmm. or malevolently by her, right?
Right.
So
maybe she's not evil.
So I don't know, but there's a lot of well, what I'm hearing is a lot of the story of the Empress and the Emperor. Mm-hmm. So
what's that story?
In tarot, there are two different cards. The Empress is Mother Nature. Mm-hmm. It's motherhood. It's creativity. It's chaos of making. It's like the abundance of all things. It's right. Just the creation aspect, which mm-hmm. is heavily connected to Earth, of course, as well as springtime. So that the progress goes Empress, Emperor, and then Emperor is like coming into that space, or the next step of that space is controlling those raw elements, that raw power of creativity.
Can I stop you for a second and interject an observation? I don't think it's a coincidence that one is male and one is female.
No, it's not.
I think the Empress sounds, it's like the female inner spirit is natural. It's giving of life. The male spirit is about, it's about dominating and controlling.
Is it?
Well, it's,
but yeah, that's a
what
lot the, of it.
It's
yeah.
kind of what you made it sound like. You said it's about taking that energy and harnessing it or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And I think harness, I think like, you know, enslaving like a horse. You put it in a harness.
Well,
right?
That would be the shadow aspect of those masculine properties of the Emperor. I don't believe that masculine energy is by nature malevolent, in the same way that I wouldn't say feminine nature by nature is malevolent or benevolent. It just is. So
right. That's interesting because I was bringing up the good and evil labels with talking about Final Fantasy VII, and you were reluctant to accept that because you think that there's more. You know, you're like this binary of good and evil. It's a little. It's not true necessarily.
Also, it creates biases, and I think that it kind of restricts an understanding of something, especially on mythological terms, on what is good or bad. And sometimes, I think every time we make a judgment call of good or bad, like anytime I feel, oh, this is bad, I just rope it on to a big bushel of other bad things that I'm like, fuck no. And then I kind of kick it off the ship of my consciousness. I'm like, you go over there now. You know, like for example, if I find someone is being a toxic person or something, I'm like, I do not have to deal with you. I need you to go the fuck away from me.
So
I'm saying like, when I think of, when I hold reserve to labeling something as good or evil, it's because I don't want to be ignorant of the processes that are going on until I have to make a judgment call, which to me, judgment is congruent to action. I think that you can't, to me, I don't think it's as passive exercise to call something evil, because once you do, you have decided to either shut your mind off or take an action, which is closing it out.
Two things. You don't use the words good and evil when talking about this stuff. I did notice, however, you used the word shadow. You have the shadow, and then what's the opposite of shadow?
Well, side? I guess it would be the conscious aspect.
Conscious and shadow.
Yeah, so consciousness is related to light. Light is basically, if you imagine it, is just the metaphor of sight. Mm-hmm. So if I turn a light on in my head, my consciousness is sort of a light. Like whatever the light shines on is the things that I'm thinking on, the things I'm focusing on, the things that I like go and put my energy towards, the things I'm conscious of, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of shadow around that. Like I might be doing something compulsively because it's not in the light. I don't really know why I'm doing it, but I'm doing it because it's still a part of my consciousness, but it's the shadow aspect. So the shadow aspect can be like an untamed aspect of a consciousness or property, but basically it means a part of an entity, a concept, a person that is unrealized and therefore can do things that are careless or maybe damaging to the self or others because it's not integrated into the understanding of how everything else is connected. It just does what it does.
Yes. It does what it does. That's a very good way of describing it. In the case of Final Fantasy VII, this alien being, she's not, when you're talking about fictional stories, using the terms like good and bad it's not necessary, but that's how these stories are usually framed, right? And since we're talking about witches
totally.
In media, it's very hard to, witches in media, as you know, are usually forced into that good-bad dichotomy, like the Wizard of Oz. Very rarely do you see them explore magic outside that.
There was Bewitched, right?
Good witch, right?
Good witch. Who else is a good witch? There's some like really cute witches in.
I think The Craft is the most of any witch movie I've ever seen. The Craft is the most mature, and I don't know. It seems like the way they portray witches is it's not good, it's not bad. I assume you've seen The Craft and you love it. Am I guessing correctly?
I've seen it. Yeah.
You don't love it.
I have feelings about it. I think it's a very nostalgic piece of film. Like, you know, like I love Clueless. Like I love The Craft, but do I think that Clueless is like the reality of life? Hell no, I don't. Like, I don't think The Craft, it kind of does a half-assed job of like depicting witchcraft, which is fine. It's a fucking movie. But I was super resentful when I was a kid when it came out because all of these people were like suddenly like into being a witch or whatever. And I was just like, oh my God, all these trenders.
How did you feel about witches back then at that point in your life?
I always was fascinated by witches because, I was always fascinated by mythology. I wanted to learn to read because of mythology and, witchcraft or magic or that kind of thing that come through a lot in mythology. Cause it started with like Greek mythology, and that kind of stuff is mentioned, but all the gods and deities themselves, they're basically, they have like witchcraft powers, you know what I mean? They're doing spells and shit all the time. So, which to me meant like cleverness and understanding these higher principles. And then, of course, I got into like more folk tales and different kind of witch stories. And then you'd see it on TV, like some witch stuff. So, I don't know, it's a mixed bag. Like, I was definitely like really into it. In a silent way, because I used to be way more introverted.
The craft, so you don't like the craft because you feel like it inspired a crop of posers. Am I hearing that right?
Oh my God, you're putting me on blast.
I'm not putting you on blast. I think we're having like a very, we're having sort of like a two street interview here. You're teaching things about me. I mean, or teaching things about you.
Teaching things about you.
No, but I mean, we're learning things about each other and about.
Well, okay, this is, I mean, sure, I think that, like, that's what my ego probably had a little wrestling with, like, these posers, and then, you know, whatever, but I think it also created a system where I was like, now all of these people are going to tap into some shit that maybe they're not ready for, and right. maybe don't understand the consequences of, because I do believe that anyone has the magic to create a spell, like anyone has a magic to, you know, read a book on Wicca or, you know, evoke the corners or whatever. Like anyone can do this. But I think that when it became a pop culture icon that made it show up on everyone's doorstep like a free prize, it was, I think it was, okay, so remember when everything got fucked up financially? In 2008 because
of George Bush.
Sure, but it was a lot because there was all these housing loans that happened, right?
Right.
So it's like, oh, no money, no problem. Just sign up the dotted line. And then all these people signed up, they signed a contract that they couldn't follow through with.
And that's created, like, witchcraft is what you're saying.
Yeah.
When you don't know what you're getting into. And that's, and by the way, I don't know how long it's been since you've seen The Craft, but that is very close to the plot of the movie, which is that Firouza Bulk takes on a power that she's not ready for.
But she's the only one in the movie that's a real witch. You know, no, I don't completely agree.
Why is she
the
only real witch? Why aren't the other girls real witches? They have.
I feel like, I don't know. I think there's something to me that has to do with the connection of madness and witchcraft and magic to me.
Because she does go mad in that. Her character goes mad. But this is why I brought up The Craft, is because you were talking about the dichotomy of good and evil, that they like to force witchcraft into the movies. And I feel like The Craft is the one movie that actually doesn't play to that dichotomy, because the force that makes Firouza Bulk, that pushes her into becoming that violent and destructive character. Then what's her name? The protagonist, she lets that same force into her, and instead of being destroyed by it, it makes her more powerful.
Yeah. I mean, I like that. I think that I like that, and I believe in that principle. But I feel like, to me, witchiness is a vibe, and that's,
Witchiness.
Witchy woo, witchiness.
What is
witchy
that?
Witchy poo. Did you ever see H.R. Puffin stuff?
Yeah. I saw the pilot.
Okay, so the there's a character called Witchy Poo in that.
Oh, she's great.
She's so amazing. And there's a special episode where Mama Cass comes on. It's like this witch convention, and Mama Cass comes on as a witch, and she sings this amazing song where she has, like, a fucking fake nose and this horrible Halloween wig and, like, a big wart and a little rat on the top of her head. And she sings this song that I think you would love, where she goes, "When I was smaller and people were taller, I realized that I was different." And it's all about, like, living her life as somebody who's different. And, like, the lyrics are, like, "Different is sorrow, different is lonely, different is trouble for you only." And then she's talking about how painful it is to be a little weirdo witch kid and then growing up and finding her sisters, and how it like just like is this incredible experience. And I feel like, to me, witchcraft isn't exactly a board game. I think it's, there's magic all around us. There's things that we can touch and feel, but most of the time, like, as I've been walking this world as a humanoid, you know, I think that we've created a social contract in our mind. The things that we do, the places we go, the things we talk about, like we've kind of agreed on a little channel that we all click into, right?
Right.
Psychically. We have a contract. Psychically. Like, humanity has a contract. And there's a small range, you know, there's a small range, and we could believe that it's a big spectrum of diversity, but really there's a very small range of acceptable social behaviors.
It feels like maybe the channel is shrinking. Am I just imagining things, or is that...
Well, I think that- it's because... I mean, it may feel that way because everyone's on social media and whatever.
Yeah.
But, so this is why I think madness is related to witchcraft. And I think this is why alienation is created, you know, magic seeing... when. Excuse me, I'm getting really excited. Okay, so basically I think that when you're in a position where your consciousness shifts, and I think that to me, as I'm growing, I'm realizing how early traumas and my mental illness of CPTSD has created a different system of understanding and seeing things that aren't there for the normal agreed upon surface. You know, like you could see beyond things when you've decided to like go a little bit off the grid, just a little bit, you know? So that's why I think like real witchcraft has to do with being a bit off grid or a bit mad.
Yeah.
Because you're allowing yourself to kind of pull back the lens a little bit because you're
kind of reminds
disengaging
me of,
from the social contract just a bit.
It's the language you're using reminds me of the Matrix when you talk about the grid and pulling back the lens and seeing, you know, describing reality, this not reality, but this agreed upon reality as a grid. You know, it's like, that's kind of what the Matrix was. It's like a metaphor. I know we're talking about movies and stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not a witch movie, but it could.
It is, though.
It is,
really,
right?
Is a witch movie.
It's not on the surface. It's not a witch movie, but deep down, it's a movie about magic, and the power of, all those things.
I mean, this is another thing. Like that's another thing that is like taking away the veil is when you think of things being futurized,
yeah.
Then suddenly there's this huge disconnect of ancient life and modern life or future life.
Right.
Which is like witchcraft is an ancient term, but it's also a general and generic term, right? At this point, fairly generic. So when you talk about being able to see beyond what is in front of you and shift your environment based on the understanding of what you're looking at, that to me is generic witchcraft, you know, 101, like seeing beyond what is, understanding how your energies are being manipulated by a higher hive mind agreement or whatever.
Yeah.
So all that kind of stuff, that's like ancient. And then like we were saying earlier, ancient aliens.
Right.
These are the same concepts. We're just modernizing them. Like yeah. it doesn't really matter what words you're using. It's still the same concepts.
Yeah.
And I think that that's why when you're getting into witchy stuff, like it's important to just study the elements to begin with, because then you start to understand how these elemental forces exist in different things.
Hmm.
And then you're not as confused by connotations, language, and philosophies, because it comes back down to these like basic understandings that are outside of words.
I keep thinking back to the, what you said about the emperor and the empress, and it definitely explains a lot about Final Fantasy VII, actually, is that...
it's one of the universal stories.
Universal stories, because you have this story of nature and the planet being, corrupted, and, or not corrupted, but, exploited by this very, you know, this corporation that's very masculine and is it's, you know, it's basically like raping the planet essentially by drilling into it and extracting and you know, it's very prescient for what's happening in our world today. And then you have, you know, this mother figure who is, it's like a shadow mother figure, I would say, because it's she has this, you know, all that imagery is there with the womb and the creepy. She actually has an eyeball for a nipple. She's naked in the tank. And so it's like, it's this very scary horror kind of Freudian, like, it's this mother imagery, but it's all fucked up, right?
Yeah, mean mommy.
And then on the other hand, you have like the opposite of the shadow mother. You have this like this other race of beings called the Cetra, who are like, they represent the you know, like, I'm going to use the words good and evil because that's how the story is framed. They're like the good, mother. There's like a dark, anti-scary mother, and then there's like a, but it's interesting how you're saying things just are the way they are because that's what they do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, so imagine witchcraft as a method or a tool for healing beyond, okay, so, sorry. So in order to really manipulate your universe to your favor, you have to understand what it is. In order to, let's say, for me to reach my hand across a table and pick up a cup of coffee, I have to understand what my hand does, how it works with me, and where the coffee is and picking it up, right? You have to really understand what you're looking at to manipulate anything, right? So I think that one of the connotations that's really heavy within witchcraft is manipulating an environment or others. So there's only a certain point where that will be fulfilling, and then at a certain point that turns inward, like wanting to manipulate things to be healthier, to be more connective. So there's like a divide there. But what's motivating you essentially is also a part of you that is developing all of those skills, right? So, sorry, I'm like getting lost in my own thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay.
I ran out of pop culture.
But you didn't, because you said over.
I had to go back to Final Fantasy VII, because after The Craft and The Matrix, I'm like, well, what else is there? I don't know.
Here's something.
Yeah.
You mentioned in Spencer's earlier, Hocus Pocus.
Oh, right. Hocus Pocus. Of course. Hocus Pocus is really big right now. That's how we got the idea of doing this topic, actually, was Hocus Pocus. Thank you for reminding me. So Hocus Pocus is, for whatever reason, it's having this big, like, second life now in, you know, among, like, 90s nostalgia people. I haven't seen it since, like, it first came out, but I do remember we were talking about this. Something, like, the witches' plan to, like, to take over the world and or whatever, their evil plan, because they're evil witches, as the story presents them. Their big evil plan is to, it revolves around, like, sacrificing some, like, virgin, it has to be like these particular two hot teenagers and who are like descendants of whatever or something. and they have to sacrifice them because they have to be virgins, right? So why don't these two hot teenagers just fuck and then foil the witch's plan?
I haven't seen it either, so I can't even answer that for you, but yeah, like how do they end up foiling it?
I think they like, you know, they send the witches back to the witch dimension or something using the anti-witch spell or some bullshit. I mean, I don't really remember what happens. I just remember the virgin thing and being like, whoa, that's weird. What a great story that would be about two teenagers who save the world by losing their virginity.
Yeah. I mean, that would have been a real easy way to, I mean, I was a horny teenager. And if that was like the thing that presented, I lost my virginity in a field near a creek at night, outside a Papa Roach concert in Vacaville in like 1998 or something.
Who's Papa Roach?
Good question. Okay, well, I'll leave that for you Neon Cauldron listeners to Google. Love everyone, and yeah, come back.
Yeah, thanks, Neon Cauldron listeners. If you like Papa Roach, you know, good for you. I don't know. What do I say? Thank you for listening. Watch The Craft. It's a good movie. I recommend it. It's maybe it's not 100% in line with your worldview, but I think it's got a lot of emotionally. There's a lot going on there that resonates.
You know, I don't think I found a single piece of media that has ever been in 100% alignment with my worldview.
Right.
Because I don't know. It's just darts.
It's just darts.
It's just darts.
You just throw them, and then if it lands on your worldview, then great.
Yeah, great.
It's about it's the throwing.
That's actually how I'm discovering my worldview. I'm just throwing darts and seeing what sticks. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Good stuff.
Okay.
While I'm driving.
Tell me about the hippie propaganda of your childhood, please.
So we had a music teacher in my elementary school who, like, when we did sing-alongs, we did a lot of original songs that she wrote, and one of them was to teach us that witches are actually not bad. And it went like this. Who were the witches? Where did they come from? Maybe your great-great-great-grandma was one. Witches were wise, wise women, they say. There's a little witch in every woman today. When women had babies, the witches were there to hold and to love them, to give and to care. There's something, there's something, I don't remember the rest. Something about how witches are good people who helped women have babies. They make them sound like they're basically midwives. But I'm sure they were more than just that.